Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio on St. Patrick's Day. Yay! I'm sitting here with, 9 inches of snow at least, which is not very fun. I have four fabulous guests today, and all of them, I'm going to ask them about green quilts. Do they have green quilts? Have they made green quilts? You know, because it's St. Patrick's Day. So first, I'm very excited for you to meet Natalie Barnes of Beyond the Reef. If you've not met Natalie yet in your quilt travels, she is incredible. She works with a lot of tropical prints, which I think is totally fascinating. And I thought she'd come on and tell us a little bit about what's going on in the life of Natalie. Say hi, Natalie. How are you?
Hi, Pat. It's so good to hear your voice, even if you are snowed in.
I know, and you're in California, so I bet you don't have any snow.
I don't, but I was greeted with an earthquake this morning, so I guess everyone has their cross to bear.
Oh, there you go. Right, you know, St. Patrick's Day earthquake just for you. That's
right. They were calling it the Shamrock Shake, I think.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you're kidding. That's so funny.
Thank you so much for including me in today's show. I'm so excited.
So, you know, Natalie, when I first met you, we were both vending at a show in California, and I was so excited when my booth was near yours. So I got to come in your booth often. You were probably, you know, ready to kick me out because I was always in there. Your fabrics that you work with and that you sell, the collections are just amazing. Big old tropical prints. You know, do you remember me visiting you?
I do. And I never kick anyone out. You know that.
I know. Even when they're obnoxious and I'm in there all the time.
No.
Going, oh, look at this. So tell me, how did you get into quilt making?
You know, how did I get into quilt making? Well, being a typical girl, I discovered boys and I realized that in reality, the best way to get their attention was to make them something. So other than a Hawaiian shirt, being from California, I started making quilts. And that was that. Not to be outdone, however, my high school boyfriend at the time, who is now an international architect, by the way, made me a quilt.
Oh my gosh.
No competition there, right?
Oh my gosh. Do you still have that one? So you can, do you have like
I don't still have it. I'm not sure that it would have survived. It was all polyester.
Oh my goodness.
It was bright yellow and bright, bright green, speaking of green for St. Patrick's Day. Mm-hmm. And that might be the very reason why I don't have too much yellow in my stash to this day. Oh, I can still see that quilt. Oh.
Now, somewhere along the way, you told me you were showing people how, you know, you were showing people how to quilt, and they were like, you know, we need patterns.
Well, the funny thing is that I went over to Kauai to mm-hmm. visit a girlfriend, and I don't sit very well, and she sits really well, and so I knew I had to have something for both of us to do in the morning, as well as the fact that it rains on the North Shore every morning. Mm. So I made a kit for her and a kit for me. And that's really how Beyond the Reef got started, is that we started stitching while drinking coffee on the lanai and watching the rain. And then I left, went back home, and all of her friends saw the project and said, God, we want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to make one of these. Where's the pattern?
Mm-hmm.
So I came back after having made a couple of other projects, and mm-hmm. we took them to the local shop there. And Julie Yukimura at the time owned Kapaya Stitchery. And she said in a very quiet voice, this does nice. I think I can sell these. What else do you have?
Oh, what else do you have, right?
Yeah. Well, I was with a writer at the time, Jill Mary Landis, who you might know some of her books, her romance and her mysteries. And she started looking around and making names up.
Oh.
So that's how Beyond the Reef got started. And really, you're right. It's a let the fabric do the work, because Hawaiian fabric is so vibrant and so beautiful on its own that most of the first designs were just large applique pieces mm-hmm. put onto a background fabric and letting the Hawaiian fabric do all the work.
Then at one point you decided that you would, you know, vend and sell and have a website that sells these prints. Is that because people like me who live on the East Coast couldn't find them?
Yeah, a lot of it is born out of design. I guess, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. You're absolutely right. You can't always get things that you want to use in your quilts, and especially when it's, you know, when you're under 9 inches of snow and you want it to be spring, you're looking for a little bit more tropical fabric.
Yes, lots of tropical fabric right
and
now.
And bright.
Right. I'm just going to spread it out on my deck so I can't see all that snow that's out that window.
Hoping Mother Nature will get the idea.
Right. See this, flowers. They're supposed to be here. So what part of this quilt making process is your favorite? What makes you excited to make a quilt?
Oh, you know, I know you're going to think this is a crazy answer, but it's really about the people for me. Mm. I think the best thing about making a quilt is seeing someone receive that quilt, or seeing somebody making that quilt, or going somewhere and having someone come up to you and say, look, I made your pattern, and they stand there really, really proud, and they show you something, and you know, it just warms my heart. I mean, I know we all love fabric, and we all love really precise piecing and doing beautiful applique, but in the long run, for me, I gotta say, I think it's the people. Is that a wrong answer?
No, I don't think there's any wrong answer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here on a radio show talking to you because I love the people. You know, that's, I totally can relate to that. And, you know, I think that all of us, like, don't so many people give quilts, Natalie? You know, they make them and they give them.
Quilters are really, really wonderful people when it comes to that. And whenever I find myself with more fabric than I need, I find a group like that that's making charity quilts, and I will make sure that they have extra fabric because it is a wonderful thing. So, yeah, my background is in commercial and corporate interior design. I had a day job for a long time, and so most of the focus that I have when it comes to making quilts or designing quilts is really from a kind of an architectural or a design or color background.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it is all about the people.
Now, tell me a little bit about how, a lot of us will collect these sort of large scale prints. And we'll stay sort of on the tropical right now because it pleases me to think warm. So how do we use them? I mean, you design beautiful things at beyondthereefpatterns.com, which is where you have your designs. How do you think about that process and getting that big print into a quilt?
Well, Pat, you know, I think there are two ways to look at those big prints. There are a lot of people that, number one, will say, I don't want to cut into it.
Right.
And to that extent, you really have to look for a design that's going to allow you to showcase that print and really have that stand out or that be the star of your quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that first way. I think the second way is really to do the exact opposite and cut into it and see it come alive, because every different cut that you make in a large scale and multicolor print is going to take you in a different direction. So I find that it's really, I don't know, it's almost yin-yang. It's two different sides of the same coin. But most people, I have to say, err on the side of the first theory, which is, gosh, I really don't want to cut it up. It's too pretty. I want to look at the design itself. And that's where a lot of our applique patterns really let the fabric do the work.
So when you have, talk to me a little bit about the cutting up part, because I do think, you know, people do want to use it. And if it's large, how can they sort of visualize what it's going to be? Do you have like a little tip on that?
Well, I think sometimes you really just have to cut into it. Cut 1 2.5-inch strip, and if you have to, use that as a binding. But you can also make templates and lay them over your fabric as if you were going to fussy cut them. We all know about that. Or you can really, let's face it, I always tell people it's just fabric. Mm-hmm. And I know some of it may be really special or may represent a fabulous trip that you took, or it may be a shirt from someone who's passed and you really don't want to cut into it too much. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. You know, I really love...
That may not
really
be much
love...
of an answer, but I also am a firm believer that sometimes you just got to use your fabric.
Right, right. Because it's not doing anything on your shelf. You're not enjoying it. And that 2.5-inch strip is a fabulous idea because that's not that much. It gives you a visual of what it's going to look like so you can see it without everything else. Now, tell me, you do travel and you teach. Can you tell me a little, you know, one of your workshops that you teach?
You know, I just had a class last week in Los Angeles, and we had so much fun. It was rotary cutting, no rulers, but no rulers was spelled RULER. So it was really almost a no rules class.
There's there
you
so go.
Much great stuff going on these days, and it was fun to have a group of people just trying a lot of different techniques. Mm-hmm. And it's a daunting task. We do a different project every 15 minutes to a half an hour, and everybody makes just one block of that technique, and then they get to go home and they have a record of everything they learned, and they get to pick and choose which they like, which they want to throw out. You know, I don't have that big of an ego that I don't mind them saying I didn't like that at all, but this really was a great thing. And going back to the liking the part about quilting that's the people part, there's nothing better than being in class and watching someone have the light bulb go off, you know?
Exactly.
Half the time you'll hear a little squeal from the back of the room.
Yay!
It's a great thing.
Yes. So do you have a St. Patrick's Day quilt or a green quilt? Do you have anything like that in your collection?
You know, after this morning's earthquake, the only thing I have is a quilt that has a crooked seam in it. I promise I'll go home and try and work on something green.
Okay, something green. Now, I do love, if anybody's looking for a really fun bathing suit quilt, your pattern, you have a pattern with bathing suits on it that's adorable.
Yes, Wahine Kine, and it's all different bathing suits. It's what you wear when you're 15, 30, 45,
Fabulous.
60, 75, and 90. Although by the time I get to those ages, people start blushing.
Well, Natalie, this has been so wonderful. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much for including me.
Now, Natalie is at Beyond the Reef. Visit her there. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this is sponsored by Moda Bake Shop, you know, a place where there's tons of great things. So I'm always excited to have a chat with designer Kate Spain. Kate is a fabric designer for Moda Fabrics, and I just love when we catch up in real life and we get to find out what's going on in each other's lives. And so I wanted to have her on and tell you a little bit about some recent projects that she's done. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, my dear Kate.
Oh, happy St. Patrick's Day to you too, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm so excited. Tell me a little bit about what fabric you have in the stores right now of yours.
Oh, sure. Let's see. My newest fabric collection for Moda is called Daydream, and it is in the stores now. And I've just been so happy to see some projects popping up on the internet of things that people are making with it. And let's see, it was inspired by, I don't know if you're familiar with Mexican atomi patterns.
Oh, no, tell me what that is.
They're beautiful, old, like, fantastical images of animals and botanicals.
Oh, okay.
And there are a lot of old embroidered garments that were made with this. And it's a certain kind of style that's specific to Mexico, and it's just beautiful. So, you know, as I usually do, I started doodling in my sketchbook, and I'm never really sure where that's going to go, but it kind of took me on this little creative journey. And I was really inspired by the colors and vibrant motifs of that kind of design style. So, you know, and then I guess for me, something that always happens with each collection is that, you know, I have the creative journey, like I said, and mm-hmm. And it's something that I get to take people along with me on it, which is really mm-hmm. fun. And then, you know, the name and the names of the patterns kind of help define what I've created. So that kind of happened with Daydream a little bit there too.
I love the hummingbird. At least I see.
Oh,
it's
thank you.
Yes. It's in the logo. Well, the little collage you do of the name. Oh my gosh, so precious.
Well, we spent so much of last summer trying to look for hummingbirds in our backyard, and luckily we did get to see one just very quickly. But I always like to throw a little something, you know, that's from my personal life and interest into my work too.
Let's talk about the Moda blog hop that we did a few weeks ago here that was all about the alphabet. And
that was so much fun.
I know. It was, you know, all of us have to, for those of you who don't realize it, all of us have to plan this like way in advance. So we're, we're doing this stuff, you know, like 6 months prior to when it happens. But we were each given a letter. And Kate Spain's letter was not a K and not an S.
No. Which was challenging, but
we
made do.
So
my letter was N.
And
totally makes sense.
Tell me what you did with it.
So I decided that, you know, I don't know about you, but I keep inspirational quotes and things around me that just are, they're woven through my days in really wonderful ways. So one of the ones is never give up on your dreams. So I thought, well, hey, I can spell that, and I think I can sew it. So I decided to make a quilt with that on the front. And then on the backside, it says, now get out of bed, because as we know, that's the only way to make your dreams come true. So it's a really fun thing that we sleep under every night.
I know you were one of the overachievers of the design team, because, you know, some of us, you know, were bringing like one block unquilted to show at the last trade show. And then you and several others had full quilts quilted. We were like so impressed.
It doesn't happen often, but I don't get to sew as much as I'd like to, but, you know, I was able to do it for that. So I love to sew at least one quilt per collection that I design, because it's a really wonderful way to interact with the fabrics themselves. And, you know, and it's a keepsake for myself.
Now, people may not be aware that you actually, you know, you're a graphic artist, or is that the right term? So your work is not just on textiles. That's just one of the products that we can find your beautiful artwork on. Tell me a little bit of the other things, and that you have kind of a new thing that we can find on your site now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I license my patterns and designs to other companies in addition to Moda. So I have been working with a company called Syria that makes rugs and pillows, which is a really great new thing for us. And I just love exploring the whole interior decorating world. And, you know, it's just a whole other color adventure to have there. So that's one of the areas. And then, I started to work recently with a company that makes bedding. So I'm really excited, because next week is the big New York Home Fashions Week.
Ooh.
And the market happens then. So a lot of the buyers are going to be coming through the showroom, and we're showing a couple new collections of bedding that'll have some patterns from Sunnyside and Daydream that they're showing. And they're going to be available, I think, in May on Macy's.com. So I'm really excited about that.
Ooh, yes. And in the past, you've actually had like mugs and plates and things like that.
Yeah. I was lucky to work with Crate and Barrel. And let's see, I've had some work in Target and the Container Store. A bunch of, you know, I've worked for another company that does stationery, and it ends up on products at Michael's stores. And I think there's some stuff still in there right now in those great dollar bins.
Right. Oh, yeah, I know. It's so fun, isn't it? It's like, we found Kate in Michael's in the dollar bin. You'll see like an Instagram picture. It's like, oh, there she is. Yes.
Yeah, oh, gosh. I have to keep my husband. You know, we go into the store sometimes, and you're never really sure when it's going to hit the shelf. So sometimes he'll be in there, and, you know, it'll be such a surprise to us. So Pete comes in with me, and oftentimes those bins are just a disaster area. So Pete will spend like 10 minutes cleaning up and arranging, organizing everything, and making sure, of course, that my stuff is right up front, as you
of
know.
Of course.
Right?
How cute.
Of course. That's...
Oh, my gosh. Now, we were talking, you know, before the show, and you told me that you were doing a little discovering about quilt making, about quilters, and sort of about and you live in Connecticut, but you sort of reached out a little bit south. And what did you find?
Yeah, well, it was really such an interesting thing. We moved to Bridgeport, Connecticut about a year and a half ago, and every January, or not every January, but we've gone down to Atlanta to the gift show for a couple years. And last year we decided, well, let's tack on a couple extra days and we'll take a little road trip south to New Orleans, because there's a couple quilt shops along the way, and we always like to try to visit, stop in on people and say hi. So we were planning out our road trip and seeing where we were going to end up going. And we realized that we could probably detour and go to G's Bend, Alabama. Ooh. So I've always just loved the quilts that come from that area. And so Pete was doing a little more research to try to figure out how to make that happen. And he ended up on the Auburn University website, where he read this little excerpt from Mary Lee Bendoff, who's one of the big quilters down there. And she was talking about how one of her cousins had sent her some hand-me-down clothes from one of her relatives in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And we thought, oh my gosh, that's so crazy, because we live here now. So we just thought, what an interesting coincidence. And when we actually did finally visit G's Bend, which was an amazing trip, we learned that, you know, sure enough, some of the families from G's Bend had moved north after World War II, and they were looking for jobs. So Bridgeport at the time was such a booming industrial city that they settled here. So it was just serendipitous coincidence.
Yeah. Oh, how fun. And you then took a workshop. Was that there or somewhere else?
Yeah, no, that was here in Bridgeport. Actually, there's still a lot of Petways and Bendoffs, of families from G's Bend that live around this area. So it was a really kind of unique experience. Loretta Petway Bennett came up from Alabama to visit some relatives, and she ended up giving a little workshop in one of the local galleries here. So I, of course, jumped at the chance and took a great workshop with her, and it was really eye-opening, the whole thing. And one of the things that was really totally new to me was, the idea, of course, that you use up the G's Bend quilters are really great at using up every little bit of fabric they have. Mm-hmm. But one of her techniques was to tear the fabric instead of using a rotary cutter, mm-hmm. which was like, what? Okay. Wow. And, you know, it doesn't really tear in a straight line. So that ended up being a whole other kind of experience that was really new and fun.
Did you leave them some of your fabric so they could tear it?
I might have.
Yeah, I might have, yes.
I did. You should have heard the room that day. It was great. And actually, Denise Schmidt is a neighbor, and she's a friend of mine, and she ended up going to the workshop too. We had such a great time together as a group, and she had never torn the fabric either. So I thought that was fun. We had a great time with that.
Yeah, when you think back eons ago, you know, people did tear if they weren't using the cardboard templates, you know, if they wanted to get the straight grain. And of course, there's still fabric shops that will do that, to actually cut it on the, you know, off the bolt, but it's not quite as, it's not quite as common though. It's sort of gone the way of the rotary, the rotary cutter. Yeah, I know. It's a lot of noise though, isn't it? I can imagine.
It was. There was a lot of noise.
So
was
tell
fun.
Me,
it was,
tell me if you have a green quilt, to be sure I ask you this. A green quilt.
I don't have a green quilt, but you know what I did was I saw your shamrock template that you posted for everyone to download.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, well, they're going to need some fabric to make this shamrock, right? So I went into my stash and I pulled out any green prints that I could find. And I made a little bundle that I posted on my blog. So I thought it would be really fun if people could just leave a comment on there if they're listening and just reference something in our conversation. And then I'm gonna cut fat quarters from the bundle and give it away.
Oh, how exciting. It's a gorgeous bundle. You can go to Kate Spain Designs.blogspot. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Thank
I'm looking
you.
At it. Yes, because you know I hoard all your fabric, Kate. So.
Oh, you do? Come on.
I do. I do.
So
I have to get it and hoard it. So real quick, we're almost done. You have your Daydream Fabric is featured in American Patchwork and Quilting's Million Pillowcase Challenge in one of their projects. It's awesome.
It's always an honor for me to see my fabric used, especially for charity causes. Mm-hmm. I love that one so much, the Million Pillowcase, because, you know, you can donate locally and that's fantastic and pick a charity of your choice. So I hope everyone will help them there. I think they're a little over halfway there, right?
Yes. Almost
there. That's great.
Thanks, Kate. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much, Pat. Happy St. Patty's Day.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And just to tell you, Kate Spain's site is, you just do katespain.com and then go to her blog. And that's where today on March 17th, you can see her green fabric. So I have Nancy Mahoney. I don't know, Irish, maybe not. We're going to find out. Nancy's back. She's going to be doing every month with me a sort of a deep dive into some of the topics to give us some really great details. She is a very technical quilter. She's super experienced and a great, great friend of mine. So hi, Nancy. Welcome.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am good. So we have to ask the very first thing. Mahoney, Irish, St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I think we're all a little bit Irish today, aren't we?
Yes, we are. So tell me a little bit about, we're going to do some topics here that are, I think are really, really good, because quarter-inch seam allowance being accurate all the time is something that I get a lot of questions about. I have a lot of beginning quilters who hang out with me. So you have some methods for getting that accurate quarter inch. Why don't you start off?
Well, it is really important that you have an accurate quarter inch seam allowance. And I think for a lot of people, they use the edge of the presser foot. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, although that is a exact quarter inch. In quilting, we really want to use a scant quarter inch because we need to allow for the thread and for the fabric being pressed over the seam allowances. So it's really better if you can mark the throat plate on your machine. I use a little mark on my on that's already on my machine, but I keep it shy of that mark. So I'm really sewing a scant quarter inch.
Okay. So when people say scant, that's really, it's for the fold over is what we're trying to take into account, really, is that that
it
becomes
is.
Part of the finished size. You know, it takes up space to fold fabric over onto the other piece.
It does. And so that's why if you, you know, back before when I had my old machine, you know, when they didn't have the marks already on your the base on the throat plate of your machine,
right.
I used a piece of masking tape, and I would use graph paper and just align my needle on the graph paper. You know, just punch it right through it, and then use masking tape along the edge of the graph paper, and you know, figure out where my seam was that I needed it to be to sew that accurately, or so I had that scant quarter inch seam allowance. And that's still a really good way to do that, is to have a line or to have a piece of tape on your machine itself and use that as a guide.
Now, why don't you explain how they can actually test it? Because I think what happens is people have a line, they're following it, but they're not actually going the next step and testing. I usually use two squares. Is that how you do it?
I use three strips of fabric.
Okay,
and you can cut them some different widths, but really to cut them a 2.5-inch width is a really good width to cut. 2.5 inches, you know, you can use a piece of binding strip. You know, if you have some leftover binding, use that. If, as long as it's 2.5 inches, and you want it to be about 5 inches long. Sew them all three together, and press them with the seam allowances going in one direction. And then you want to measure that center strip. And it should measure, if you started out with 2.5-inch wide strips, it should measure 2 inches from top to bottom.
Right.
What I see quite frequently in classes, and I do it myself, is that when you're sewing along, you're doing pretty good when you start out, and then maybe you get a little wobbly, so that's not really a quarter inch all the way down. And when you get to the end of your pieces, you kind of let it trail off.
Right, right. Yeah, it goes like, it's like scoops away, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Now, how do you avoid that?
And I find myself doing that. If I'm not really being careful when either using a stiletto or really keeping hold of it and make sure I'm guiding it straight all the way through my presser foot.
Now, do you use a stiletto often? And a stiletto would be a pointy object. They're not shoes.
And yeah, I actually have a stiletto that I never use. But I use... But I use the tip of my seam ripper because that works just as well. And you know, we have our seam ripper handy, and I do.
Sadly.
I was just working on something where I had these little tiny pieces. They're about 1.5 inches squares, and I was finding that I was kind of trailing off as I got to the bottom of it. So I was using my seam ripper to carefully guide that through, so I made sure my seam was staying consistently the same width all along.
Right. It happens so easily when you're just zooming. All of a sudden at your tail end, you're not getting close anymore. But I think measuring is where a lot of people just don't take that step. They're like, oh, I have it, but they're not doing that test with all the strips. And I think that's an excellent one. Also, I wanted to tell people that on allpeoplequilt.com and American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's website, there is a video section and a how to quilt section where there are tons of good advice, including some videos about seam allowances. So also, Nancy, I've found this sometimes, is that people have maybe old rulers that they've been using a while, and they actually have shaved off part of the plastic so that their strip is not actually, let's say, 2.5 inches when they cut it. So they're starting with fabric strips, you know, units that aren't even correct. Yeah,
I found that too. And the other thing I found is that people are using, sometimes they're using their mats, the lines on their mats, rather than the lines on their ruler.
Yeah.
And the lines on the mat are not always accurate.
Right. That you might have an accurate mat, but you need to check it against a ruler. And also, what are your thoughts about switching rulers in a project? Because I know some people will never do that because they feel like rulers might be slightly different.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I was just having this conversation in the class, and that's what we were talking about, and that it's really important. I really feel that you should stay with one brand of rulers and use that, not necessarily the same ruler throughout the project, but the same brand of rulers throughout the project.
Right, right. You know, because visually the lines are where they are, and within a brand, they're going to be positioned kind of the same place. So if you're using, you know, with the thickness of the line that you're measuring gets you all those kind of things. So I do try to also stay with the same ruler. Do you have any other tips or should we do a new topic?
Well, I just think it's just to talk a little bit about the mat. Not only the other reason why I would never use the rulers on the lines on the mat is because you're going to be cutting in the same place all the time on your mat and you're going to use your mat up faster.
Mm.
So
that's
if
a good
you,
point.
You know, rely on your rulers. I use my mats very occasionally. If I'm cutting like 32 inches, then that's easier to use the line on my mat. But if I'm cutting strips, then I want to cut using my ruler.
Yeah. Let's do straight strips because that's another thing that people find, you know, you're doing that whole, you know, you've folded in half and you're doing the whole length now. It, you know, it's folded over. And where the fold is, a lot of people have trouble that gets like a curve and they don't want that. You know, we don't want that because then that's not really usable for the whole length because it's not straight.
Like a V?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it buckles there. When you open it up, it's got extra or it's actually curved depending on how flat you got that seam. What's a good way to handle that?
Well, I always start off by pressing my fabric and pressing that fold. You know, when your fabric comes folded, I press that fold to make sure I get rid of it.
Oh, okay.
And then I line up my seam the salvages, and kind of shift them back and forth until everything hangs flat.
Right.
And then I lay it down on my cutting mat. And I'm really fortunate. I can walk around my mat, but I know not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to place your ruler, the line on your ruler, so that the short end of your ruler, one of those lines, is aligned on that fold.
Okay.
Then I can walk around and make a cut so that I'm cutting along the right edge of my ruler. If you can't do that, you can turn your mat around and make that cut and then turn your mat back around 180 degrees. Because you always want to be cutting along the right edge of your ruler.
Okay.
And
so
then you want to measure over from that cut edge.
So you're basically wanting to cut from the fold end so that you're getting it flat.
Yes. I want to put the fold next to my body and align my ruler along that fold line so that my ruler is always perpendicular. It's at a 90-degree angle to that fold.
Cool. And I think it's another thing where when we're working, we're doing a lot of stuff, we just don't go through that extra step to be sure it's pressed firm or that we've even straightened the salvage. That's really important, that tip.
It is. It's really important to get rid of that little waste part that's all jaggedy, you know, and they're uneven. If you've pressed your fabric and lined up the salvages, probably the cut ends are not even. So you're going to need to do a cutting strip that's going to get those evened up. You can also use two rulers. You can place a smaller ruler, say, that's on the fabric, and you've aligned that line on the ruler with the fold, and then place your longer ruler next to it, covering the edges that you want to cut out. Then remove the small ruler, hold the long ruler in place, and cut along the right edge of the ruler.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like it's a lot of steps, but it becomes very second nature, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Now,
and it's really important to get what you want, to get the size of blocks that you need and to get the look that you want. So cutting accurately is really just the first step.
Mm-hmm. And the smaller, you work in all kinds of sizes, Nancy. I tend to work like large and extra large. You know, I don't work tiny.
I do tiny.
You do tiny. But talk about how important it is when you're working small for that accuracy.
Well, when you're working small and you're working with something that's going to finish at one inch and you're off by a 16th of an inch, which doesn't sound like a lot, but you have, you know, 8 pieces, and you add up that 1/16th of an inch, you're now off by 1/2 inch.
Right.
So
that's a
lot.
That's
where it really becomes important, that you're measuring, that you're cutting accurately, you're sewing accurately, you're measuring your units to make sure they're finishing at the size you need them to be. Because it does add up over, you know, when you put a lot of seams there together, that little bit adds up.
Yeah, it does. And I don't think people realize that either, you know, especially when they're fairly new to it, that it just gets sucked up very, very quickly, all those little slight imperfections. So we have a little bit of time here. So let's talk about ergonomics, because the cutting table, if we're not cutting at a good height, we're going to have problems from, you know, our back to our legs to everything else. What is a good height for our table?
Well, I use a height that's 36 inches. It's the same height as my kitchen counter.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a kitchen island. You can buy the kind of the portable ones that you can move around your room. And
that one works for you?
It works great for me because it really does allow me to be able to walk all the way around it, to cut from both sides of it. When I'm trimming a quilt, I can move around it easily. And it's just a good, comfortable height for me, at being at 36 inches.
And now, how tall are you?
Person, I'm 5'5".
Okay. Yeah, we're about this. I'm by 5'4". So, yeah, I use the same height. Kitchen counter height
Kitchen counter height, yeah.
Yeah. Now, for tall.
And I also have my ironing table.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an ironing board. I have an ironing table, and it's also at 36 inches.
Yeah.
So that whenever I'm ironing or I'm cutting, I'm able to stand with good posture and not have to lean forward. If you're leaning forward, you're going to end up with a backache and quickly.
Right. Right. And if you're reaching too high, you know, if your counter's too high, then that's bad. And the tall people, you can get those lifter things to put under the legs of tables. Or have one made, you know, that works.
Exactly. Yeah, you need to get it up at a height where it's a comfortable height for you, and you're not straining, particularly straining your back, but also straining your legs.
Right. You know, Nancy, we are almost out of time, and so we will next month talk a little bit more about ergonomics. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Awesome. So visit Nancy at nancymahoney.com. She blogs often, has lots of fun things. And Nancy, put your green quilts out. I'm sure you have some.
I've got them all out.
Yeah. See you later.
All righty. Take care, Pat.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. This is Pat Sloan, and I am really excited to have Jackie Garrick of Tall Grass Prairie Studios. Jackie, I just love Jackie's work. I love her quilts. I love her thoughts about her work. She's just amazing. And so Jackie's here to sort of give us an update on what she's doing. And she also is one of the board members for QuiltCon, for the Modern Quilt Guild. She's on the Modern Quilt Guild, which host QuiltCon. She's going to tell us about that. Let me get that all organized. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Right back at you. Love you. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, if I could talk today, that would be good. So, Jackie, you've been doing a lot of teaching around the country lately. How's that going for you? You are a teacher by training.
I'm a teacher by training, and you know, I kind of decided as quilting became my career that teaching was going to be the thing that I was going to focus on. Mm-hmm. And I'm all over the place. Let me tell you, I've been stuck in airports all across the country this winter.
I know. I was emailing you the other day, and you're like, I'll be home later. So I know that you're out and about. You also, with the Modern Quilt Guild, you're on their board. There, I got it all said right. And you have some new things that you're doing with them.
I do. I've taken on a new role with the board. I am chairman of the board.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, you know, is not much different than what I was doing before, but I have this official title, and, you know, it kind of makes me the face of the Modern Quilt Guild, which mm-hmm. in my travels teaching, it gives me an opportunity to, you know, talk with people all across the country, traditional quilters, modern quilters, and our members in the guild, you know, to answer questions, to address concerns, to, you know, help educate about modern quilting. And I'm really excited about that because I'm pretty passionate about being a modern quilter.
You are. You are an excellent spokesperson for the guild, which is, I think, is an amazing thing. That normally guilds are sort of regional, right?
Say that again, Pat. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's because normally guilds are kind of regional or local. You belong to your local guild. But the Modern Quilt Guild is like an umbrella unit, and that right. It has local chapters, and that it also has the ability for people to join it at the top level, which is not, you know, if they don't have a local chapter.
And it's kind of nice, too, that, you know, we've got people that out in rural areas, not near cities, not near a guild, and they can join as individual members, and we love that. Because we can serve them as well through that kind of parent organization, which is the Modern Quilt Guild.
And there are very few sort of functions like that. I think in the art community, there's some. But I just love that aspect of it. It's a lot of work. You all need to have major applause for putting it all together.
Well, and as you know, we are very young. We're just a baby organization. Officially, we just started last summer. Right. And, you know, part of that process is a lot of learning, a lot of learning from our mistakes, and a lot of getting our feet underneath us. And, you know, our members, let me tell you, they have stepped up and joined and volunteered to help. We've got a great group of members.
So people can, what's the website for the Modern Quilt Guild?
So it's themodernquiltguild.com.
Okay.
And through themodernquiltguild.com, you can get our blog. You can also access information about QuiltCon, which I know we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right. So QuiltCon, last 2 years ago, not this year, but the prior year, you put on the first quilt show, which many, many guilds do. This is what guilds like to do, have a quilt show where there's instructors and you get to show the quilts made by the guild members. And the Modern Quilt Guild, being the umbrella organization, hosted one in Austin, Texas called QuiltCon. And in 2015, you'll have your second one, which is super exciting. Tell me what's going to be going on with that.
Oh, so we are thrilled that mm-hmm. QuiltCon 2015 is coming up. It's February 19th through 22nd, and our members voted to bring it back to Austin, Texas. So we're thrilled to be back there. We've got some really exciting things happening. First of all, the G's Bend quilters are going to be our keynote speakers and teachers at our event, and we are so excited to have them.
That's amazing.
We also do a historical exhibit every year. Mm-hmm. And this year it's going to be the modern materials quilts of the 70s from the collection of Bill Volkening, mm-hmm. and we're excited about that. We've got other special exhibits. We have classes. We have lectures, we have demonstrations, vendors, and of course we have our quilt show. So it is the event for modern quilters across the world to come together, to be inspired by each other, to learn from each other, and to just get to know each other. So we're excited to have it again in 2015.
Now, is it open for the workshops yet, or is this or is just the sort of placeholder announcement, general announcements there?
Right. It's the general announcement right now. We're still actually, you know, organizing our instructors, getting our courses together. Those will be announced May 15th.
Okay.
And registration for our members opens June 24th and for the public July 1st.
Okay.
So those dates, get those on your calendar, everybody.
Laz, get it down, write it down. So I have to, as of right now, I'm not booked to go anywhere else. So I'm hoping that I can make it there.
That's, you know, we want to have you, Pat.
Yes, exciting. I don't want to miss anything. I'm, you know, I have to be in on it all. So tell people a little bit about your personal work, Jackie, your quilts, because you make quilts, I think, a little different than maybe the average person does. Your quilts have a lot of thought behind them. What sort of gets you motivated on new design?
You know, that's so nice of you to say. You know, I've worked really hard to develop a voice over my really short quilting career. One of the things I'm passionate about is using quilting as a medium to send a message. You know, I've made some 3 or 4 what I call modern message quilts, and I have a whole series of those quilts that I'm working on. My biggest problem with that is being home enough to sew. So, you know, I'm working on a whole series that I'm excited to share with people. The last one that I did was for American Quilter Magazine, sorry, that was called Balancing Act. And it was kind of, you know, my life was a little bit out of balance at the time, being on the road all the time.
Right, right.
And so my quilts come from a really personal place. And, you know, that's kind of the joy in quilting for me, to take my life, my family, the things I'm passionate about, and put them into fabric.
Yeah, and that's really what I think is lovely, that you also share that on your website, you know, tallgrassprairiestudio.blogspot.com. So people can go there and see your work, and you do share what you're doing, which is really nice, because I feel like it's like, oh, I get to know you even better that way. Why don't you, you know, and not everybody can travel to take a workshop with you, but you have workshops online. What kind of class do you have online?
I do. I have a crafty class that's called Improvisational Piecing Modern Design, and I teach 3 techniques there and 7 different quilts. I'm kind of a teach a quilter to fish rather than give a quilter to fish kind of teacher.
Yeah.
I'm really all about technique because, you know, if you have a technique in your pocket, you can kind of take it and apply it to your own design, your own aesthetic. You know, if you're a traditional quilter and you have that technique, you can take it your way. If you're a modern quilter and you have that technique, you can take it your way. I just filmed a new class that I'm excited about. I'm just kind of obsessed right now about walking foot quilting. And I love quilting my own quilts, and I love a line. And walking foot, you know, it's great for quilting both straight and curved lines, and it has such great potential. So that class is going to be coming out soon, and I've been teaching that class across the country, too. So, you know, I'm trying to expand myself, and, you know, every quilt I make, I learn something, and when I learn something, I like to teach it to others, too.
Yeah, you are the ultimate teacher, I think. You know, you learn and you teach. You're out there doing it all. You're amazing.
And, you know, Pat, the best part about teaching others is that every time I have 20 students in my class, I have 20 new teachers that teach me things too. So that's really one of the greatest parts about being out there teaching.
Now I want to switch gears just a little bit because, you know, my own curiosity. First of all, you have green in your studio. So do you have a green quilt? St. Patrick's Day.
You know, when you said that in our prep for this, I thought, oh my gosh, I do not have a green quilt.
What? Did you make one quick?
I'm wearing a green scarf today, and I'm sitting on a green chair.
Okay. You know, the last 24 hours.
That's as good as I did for today.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, we'll let you pass. You have to work on that one. That's going to have to be the green quilt, Jackie's green quilt. So here, just to wrap it up, we have a couple minutes. I want to talk about studio organizing, because I'm obsessed with studio organizing. And so you, on February 20th of 2014, on your site, you showed your studio and a little bit about how you organized it. Can you just tell me that? Tell me about it.
Sure. It took me about 6 months in this new place to kind of, you know, when you're in a new space, you kind of have to work in it for a while to kind of get it to work for you. And so I finally kind of got it to work for me. And for me, it's really important to have things really accessible so that they're right there at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. And I'm an obsessive organizer, kind of like you, mm-hmm. but I like things put away because mm-hmm. I don't work really well in chaos.
Yeah, me either.
The other thing about my studio, and I love to have things that are inspirational around me. I hang quilts on the wall. You know, I have this great thread cabinet that my father built for me. I have Yoda that looks at me and reminds me of my mom and my son every time I'm making quilts. You know, all those little special touches that, you know, make a studio personal are really important for me to have in my studio.
What are those funky metal baskets that tilt? What are those?
Oh, so that's actually an IKEA remix.
Ah.
And the ladder that they kind of hang on was part of a shelf that I bought at IKEA that got bent, and so I took it apart, and I had that kind of one side of it. Mm-hmm. And then those baskets I bought at Target, and I just clip them on there with binder hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a little ladder that holds all these, I mean, from my rotary cutter to my spray starch to my templates, my painter's tape, my scissors, everything is right there so I can just grab it and it's right by my cutting table. So I kind of MacGyvered that.
Mm-hmm.
but that's, you know, you don't have to buy expensive stuff to make your studio work. I mean, that was something left over with really inexpensive baskets, metal baskets, clipped on with binder clips, and I've got this great storage thing that's right there by my cutting table. I just love that.
Well, Jackie, this has been so great. Thanks for coming on and sharing everything.
You're welcome, Pat. And guys, go to the QuiltCon website, quiltcon.com,
yes,
to get more information about QuiltCon 2015. That's the place to get all the information about hotels, teachers, all those kinds of things.
And we'll both see you there.
All righty.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can come back next week and we'll have a new show. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, and you can visit me at patsloan.com. And I hope that if you're out and about, that I will meet you at a show or at your guild and chat quilting.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.